You're listening to the Love is Black podcast.
We're the host of Fly.
The love is dope.
And the conversation's always 100.
Welcome back to your favorite podcast. It is Love is Black. I'm Harvey.
And I'm Carice.
And we continue with a fantastic season, just promoting, just spinning positivity about love that is Black. And we've got another great couple. But as I do at the beginning of every episode, are you still feeling good about this season, babe?
I mean, what are you expecting? A different answer at some point?
If you're like, you know what? I don't know if I really feel it. I mean, just
and then do we stop?
Then I'm like, really? What's wrong? And then we kind of have a 37 conversation, but it's banter, baby. Say something.
Okay, I'm good. I'm good. Yay! Excited.
Oh my goodness. Wow. So yeah, so Carice seems thrilled, and that's great.
I'm super excited. Now you're trying to make me look bad.
Nobody can see.
We know you're excited. We know.
Stop it. Stop.
Okay. Well, I'll say why I'm excited. I'm super excited that's because we found a beautiful Black couple that is going to share with us their love story. And I am so happy to share with all of our audience today, Earl and Kelvin. Thank you, you guys, for joining us tonight.
Thank you for the invitation.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I'm so excited. I just don't even want to hold back anymore. Let us know how you guys met. Where does your Black love story begin?
In the club. Yeah, I tell you, about 10 years ago?
10 years ago.
Yeah, I was out with some friends and I walked into Blake's on 10th Street and I saw Earl at the bar and my eye was like, oh, let me try to talk to him and see what's going on with him. He was very attractive. And I think he was there. He was there with a bunch of friends. I really didn't notice them, but his personality, his look, everything stood out. And so I was like, I'm gonna go up and strike up a conversation and see what happens. And I guess the rest is history.
That is absolutely right. We, just like Kelvin said, it was actually right after work. I had gone to Blake's with some friends, some coworkers, really, just for happy hour right after work. And it was really the first time we'd ever done this. And Kelvin had come in with his roommate and his best friend. And I also noticed him and we just struck up a conversation and we've been talking ever since. If I'm not mistaken, we actually went on our first date shortly after that.
I think it was the next day, maybe. I don't know.
It was either the next day or the day after that. It was really soon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We went to a restaurant that we both did not particularly care for.
But it was
before we didn't know that. Or after you went?
That was before, but it was one of those, chain restaurants that everybody loves and goes to in Buckhead. So
right,
general, like, okay, let's meet there. And we get there and start having dinner. Come to find out, neither one of us really likes that restaurant.
I mean, it really is a celebration of mediocrity. And for those who know, if you go to a restaurant and the menu has ads in it, you know that the focus is not on food.
But they have good cheesecake.
They do.
Okay.
There you go. That's a hint.
Wonderful dessert. Beautiful gowns. wonderful place. Because I don't know who your sponsors are, so you want to be very careful.
And I think after that first date, we had some subsequent dates.
Yes.
And I think
you were seeing someone and I was seeing someone, kind of, sort of.
Yes, that's accurate.
And we decided to see
other someones must not have been too serious.
No, it was. I don't think it, at least for me, it wasn't serious.
No, I don't think it was too terribly serious. We were essentially in that still dating phase. The way I look at it is, if you're single, you are single.
Yes.
I mean, you can date, you explore, you are trying to figure out who you want to be with. And until you're really ready to commit to somebody, you'll still just date.
Or be with nobody.
The government sees it as either you're single or you're married. So, I mean, that's how it is. So you explore, and that's what we were both kind of doing at the same time. And if I'm not mistaken, we decided to make our commitment to each other more serious on Pride.
Atlanta Pride.
We were at the Georgia Aquarium.
That was a few months later.
Right. We were at the Georgia Aquarium where we, I think, officially decided that we were going to see each other. More exclusively.
Yeah. Solidify that relationship.
Right. Yeah. And during that time, go ahead, Calvin.
Wasn't it that night you broke up with the
I did.
You did. Yeah.
Yes, I did. I terminated my engagement with somebody else.
Engagement.
I'm very professional in the way that I describe my relationship. I terminated that arrangement and decided to enlist with someone new, you see. And and it's funny because when that time had occurred, we were both in very unique positions in our lives too.
Mm-hmm.
So I was working at the High Museum in their development and membership department. And I had also just started
my nonprofit,
WeCare at the time.
And that was very impressive to me. You know, the CEO of a nonprofit thought, like, ooh.
Right, I was what, 24?
Yeah.
I was 24.
Yeah, you were young. And right. So I was very impressed.
And you, how old were you at the time?
Oh, I don't know.
You'd have been 45.
40 something.
45, yeah. Yes, if I was 24, you'd have been 45.
Oh, okay. So, and what was I doing at the time? I think I was,
were you working from home at that company?
Maybe. I think I was, maybe, was that McKesson?
I think so.
Yeah, that was
McKesson. Yeah.
But yeah.
Right, and I think that's kind of where some of the adventure kind of comes from because, you know, I was 24, I had just started my nonprofit, so I'm hustling. I'm, you know, trying to find donors for programs. I'm running these arts programs for the kids. I'm running this literacy program for fourth and fifth graders. I was borrowing I had borrowed like a minivan so I could pick up these juniors and seniors who were, they were leaning towards the arts as a profession. And a lot of times kids just don't understand that when you pick an art major, it's not all drawing and painting. There are legitimate, serious careers in the field of arts between architecture, design, animation. There's so many ways you can go. And Kelvin was such a huge supporter of mine at the time.
I sure was.
I was staying
on the go. Having all these fundraisers.
Right.
At these fundraisers for these kids in the arts. I said, okay, let me participate in these auctions and fundraising.
Right.
They invite my friends with money to come.
Right. And a lot of his friends did have money. I mean, it was very helpful. Very helpful. They were very great donors. And I think one of the moments where I knew that I could love Kelvin is because I saw how much he was willing to put his name behind mine. And I shouldn't even say behind, next to mine. You know, he really helped me launch that organization and take it to another level.
And then you started with the bar, where the stir it at? No, it's Finn's.
Finn's.
Right. And he, so I guess it's part of his Jamaican roots. He was constantly working, constantly going, we hardly ever saw each other. And I'm like, I'm only seeing you at these fundraisers. I had to come by your job to get a drink just to see you.
mind you, I was sleeping over at his place too. Hold up. I was very present.
Just sleeping. The next day, early in the morning, gone.
I didn't
see you at all.
And he's right about that. So from the NPO, from We Care and the High Museum, I ended up getting a job, my first managerial style job that was like salary based, working for this restaurant. So I was their events coordinator. And I was still doing charitable work, even though I was no longer doing the programs myself. I was working there, and you know that we did have a nightlife. So I would be working late.
And I would be going out with my friends by myself, and people didn't believe I was in the relationship. But same. They never saw her. I'm like, yeah, I'm in a relationship. Yeah. Where is he? Where he working?
He hustling. Right. Mind you, they had met me because they were the donors. It's not like they didn't know me and they didn't see us together. But Kelvin is absolutely right. We were not able to really go out as frequently together because, you know, he works during the day, and then I would go to work like around 3, and I would come home sometimes till midnight, 1, 2, 3, 4 o'clock in the morning.
I was about to say, after what was closing time?
Yeah,
last call,
3 o'clock? It was 2:30. It was 2:30. I would have to count down the money, so I couldn't necessarily just get up and go. But I think during that time, and I also bought my first house at that time.
Wow.
And so he stopped staying with me.
Right.
And then 26. So I never saw.
Lies. Lies and fabrications. That's not a lie. No. See, what happened was,
like, we gotta coordinate with. You gonna be home? When can I come over? Friday at what time? Okay.
There was some coordination going on. That is true. But what happened was, so I did 2 years. I think I worked there. So I bought my house at 26, and within 2 years from that point, he's right. I don't ever really seem to stop. So my friend Shannon and I had opened a bar and gallery of our own down in Atlanta called Studio Number 7.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's when we had some growing pains. Launching that was, again, now I really never saw him. He was spending the night at this bar.
Sometimes.
When they were opening it up and getting it ready, and there was a fire.
That's right. And the day before we were going to open, the whole place burned down. It was a
yes,
indeed.
So after that, they regrouped and still opened. Then they had a break-in.
That's
and
right.
So he had the bright idea, I'm going to spend the night there to prevent somebody from breaking. I'm like, okay, what are you going to do if somebody break in and you there?
Tell them to leave.
Oh, I got my baseball bat.
And now
what if they have a gun? What you going to do then?
They're not going to shoot me.
So I could barely sleep knowing that he was spending the night in this bar every night.
It wasn't every night, but it did happen more than once.
Wow.
And then Shannon and I did realize that this is not safe. We should not sleep here. It was also uncomfortable. So the first year that the bar opened, this is 2 years after it had burned down. So I think I'm 28. I'm around 28 or something like that.
This, the first year we opened, I made, and I have the tax returns to prove it, I made personally income just over $2,800 that year. Wow. The year. Wow. And our relationship was seriously strained. Mm-hmm. We had actually stopped dating at one point. He started dating somebody else who I don't know who that is. Mm-hmm. And
They're not important.
We had
he had started dating somebody else. I had started talking to other people, mostly to pass the time. And then I'm not even sure exactly what brought us back together.
Before you get to what brought you back together, it seems like you guys held on for a little while there was so much time apart. What exactly was keeping you guys together during those rough times in the beginning? Was it a baseline friendship that you had? Was it just that general attraction? Was it like, you know, just a desire to make it work? What exactly was the foundation of that time of trying to push through not really seeing each other?
Well, it's definitely going to vary. I have one response and Kelvin probably has another. So
that's fine.
It was probably still the general attraction and that love was there. It had already taken root. And even though it was, you know, tumultuous. Is that how you say it?
Yes. People don't listen to this.
You know, I'm from the South.
So. I know, but that's not an excuse.
It's okay. We did well on our SAT. We got all these words y'all throwing at us.
But it was a test of our relationship. So, you know.
Oh yes.
It really tested the relationship.
And I think for me, well, I guess it is the same. The feeling that we had, the commitment that we had made to each other was significant enough that in spite of the distance, even though we were in the same city, sometimes even sleeping in the same home, there was a gap growing between us. It was never that wide that it felt like, I don't even know you anymore. It was really just, I remember very distinctly Kelvin saying, I don't ever see you anymore. And it doesn't feel like you are as committed to me as you are to all of your other projects. And the reality is Kelvin was right. And when he presented that to me, I had to do some soul searching and I had to really look at the time that I was investing, because I happen to believe, like most people, that when you really care about something, you invest it. Mm. But when you stop caring about something, you do tend to pull away. And I think that that is absolutely right. I started to care less and less about the relationship, in part because I think I grew complacent. Well, I just figured it was there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, I can go and come back to it. And that was not the case. I could not do that. I had to be fully present in that relationship, mm-hmm. just like I was fully present in my bar, mm-hmm. just like I was committing to all of these other things. Mm-hmm. And that is something that I had to learn throughout that process.
Absolutely. That's interesting. One thing I find interesting is, Kelvin, you mentioned that Earl was doing a lot. You could see that he was motivated, that he was doing things. It almost seems like the one of the things that attracted you to him
was one of the things that kind of
hurt the relationship.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it was that double-edged sword. Right. You see, his motivation, that go-getter attitude, was something that really attracted me to him. But then eventually, I'm like, wait a minute. I hardly ever see you. You know, we need to find some time to work this out. If we can't work this out, we need to yeah, just halt, separate for a while until we can figure out how this relationship's gonna work.
But eventually, we came to an understanding.
I had actually made a career change.
Well, hallelujah.
So I had stepped away from Studio Number 7, and I had actually started working for the Center for Civil and Human Rights. And that gave me, and although I was still working in their marketing department doing events, because that's just what I did really well at the time, so I would still have late nights, but my schedule became far more consistent, and my money also became
stable.
I was able to. Money may not be the root of all money. Money helps. Money really helps. It may not buy happiness, but it definitely buys stability. Braxton, we're talking right now.
Right. We're doing laundry with a teenager and nine years old.
My life kind of stabilized, and it allowed us to reacquaint ourselves with what it looks like when we are really together. And I think from that point, we had actually taken some pretty significant life steps, didn't we?
Yeah. My job situation, even though I've been in the same kind of career field, project management, I just went from a different company, from being a contractor to being a full-time employee, to the company I work for now. And that was a significant salary increase. Mm-hmm. And oh God, thank God. Thank God. I am truly blessed, truly grateful for that opportunity and the feel I have now. I'm happy, I enjoy going to work every day.
If I'm not mistaken, that year would have been 2015. I think it was 2015. We decided that we were actually going to move in together. Mm-hmm. So I sold my house and we bought a townhome in Smyrna. Mm-hmm.
Nice.
Okay.
In 2015. And the reason I remember it is because that's the same year that gay marriage legalized. And
nice.
Up to that point, we didn't, you know, we really didn't know what what am I trying to say?
I think we had talked about the marriage thing. We had talked about going to a state.
We had talked about civil unions. We had talked about
going to a state that allowed marriage. But then you're right.
It was 2014 or 15.
That happened. Said, oh, no, I don't know where. They're right here in Georgia. You get married.
Right. And that's what I think also changed the trajectory of our future. Once we knew. Go ahead.
Sorry. Yeah, that we had started talking about marriage before any proposals were even out there. So we knew we were going to get married when I proposed like a year later.
Right. But it was the legalizing of gay marriage in the United States that really propelled us to have to actually now do the logistics of what does it look like to have a life together as a union. And we purchased our first home together, mm-hmm. that townhouse in Smyrna.
And probably within the second year we got married.
Yep.
Then
it was 2 years after.
No.
We got married in 2017.
But we were on in that house for two years. So it was like we got married in October.
Yeah.
Because it was Gay Pride again. So right. We officially started dating Atlanta Pride, mm-hmm. and we got married Atlanta Pride weekend.
Right.
So that was in October. And I think we moved in December. We moved December of the same year
to a bigger home because we were preparing for a family. Mm-hmm. Oh. A marriage to natural. So we started, we knew we wanted to start a family. So we were weighing the options of all the options of doing that. Surrogacy, you know, adoption, private adoption. And then we decided, let's foster. So to see if this is something we really want to do. So let's foster. And we went through that process. It was a long process.
Yeah. Took a year.
Yeah, it took a year to actually go through all the courses, classes, interviews to get to even be approved to be foster parents. And in that process, they kind of asked you what type of child you're looking for. We told them, and we said, oh, okay, the age range, say between 3 and 10. I think we said 3 and 10. And you know, race didn't matter, gender didn't matter. So we said, the child could talk. So
right, I need that child who can walk, talk, and do some things.
Because you were saying, when babies cry, we don't know what's wrong with them. I need somebody to talk and say, if you're crying, you could tell me what's wrong. So we told the defects folks this information.
We went through Cobb County defects. We didn't go to a private agency. We went to the state.
Okay.
So they called Earl, and the first placement was an infant.
They got the right one.
A newborn. They called Earl because if they had to call me, I was, oh no, we're infants. No, we're
3 weeks old.
Wow.
And so, yes. So we had
little baby
from 3 weeks? I think 3 weeks. He was 3 weeks old, and we had him until he was almost a year.
Oh, wow.
And that, again, adventurous. That was, roller coaster of an adventure. Because, you know, the 1, 2, 3 a.m. feedings and changing. Right. And,
he was a baby.
No
schedule.
And I
waking up every 2-3 hours.
The day we said, okay, because wasn't it a situation where, it was a situation where the current foster family could no longer take care of him. They needed someone. It was the respite.
Here's what had happened. And this is where our desire to really be excellent foster parents came in and get kids from that system specifically. Because, you know, when you're adopting or when you're building your family, you can go the natural way. You can do the private adoption, which might be a little cleaner. It might be, you know, maybe you'll get exactly what you're looking for. But especially after this experience with the baby, it really made, at least me, I think Kelvin too, look at it and go, we can do so much. We have it. We can help. We can be a blessing to somebody. That baby had already been, we were actually the baby's third home.
Wow.
3 weeks.
3 weeks.
In 3 weeks, we were third home. Mm-hmm. And that to me spoke volumes of what even the smallest kids in that system can go through. Because isn't that crazy? This baby just came out the womb.
Because I think what happened, you know, that
the first family was going on vacation.
And
couldn't keep the baby going on vacation.
And then the respite family couldn't, that's when temporary placement kind of sort of. They couldn't keep him, and so they called us.
Right.
And what they call you.
Right. They got the right one.
And that turned out to be such a blessing because it was a great experience. It showed us that we could handle taking care of children. If we could handle taking care of infants, surely we can handle a toddler or someone older, because that was an experience, I tell you.
Yeah.
So let's get into the adoption of our boys, because
which started while we had a baby.
Yeah, we started the process of what they call foster to adopt. So we went there, what is it called? The program, the website or something.
Oh, it's My Turn
Now. My Turn Now. So if these are kids that are in foster care that need to be adopted.
The parental rights have been terminated, so they are ready for long-term adoption.
Okay.
And so we go to the website, and we're looking at all of these kids. And I tell you, if someone's out there thinking about fostering or adopting, look at the foster care system to adopt, because I can only give you our experience from the state of Georgia. And My Turn Now was just one of many sites or adoption agencies. On My Turn Now, the number of children in Georgia that are available for adoption would blow your mind. And if it was up to Earl, he would try to adopt them all. But you know, I had to keep him in check.
Dang, we got enough bedroom. We can get a couple more.
Oh, that's good to figure out. So we browsing the website, we received children that we were interested in. We saw this one kid that we're interested in, and we sent an inquiry through the website, but we never heard back. And but our caseworker that's working with us let us know about an adoption party, which is an event where you go to meet other kids in the area that are available for adoption. Mm-hmm. Just so happened that the child we saw on the website would be at this adoption party. And I'll let Earl tell it from there, because his little wheels get to turning. And
that's how he described it. He said, "When my wheels, when your wheels get to turning, that's when I get nervous.
Because either we throwing out some money, or we talking about buying a new house, or there's a project.
Our life is changing.
Something is about to change when his wheels get to turning."
Well, Kelvin is right. So what happened was, we went to this function, and I saw that our son, Braxton, our youngest, was going to be at this party. So I said, all right, we're going to go. We're going to meet Braxton. We're going to see what this is about. And keep in mind, we also, whenever you go to these functions, they always tell you, keep an open mind. Talk to multiple different kids. See what's out there. Because you never know when God will tap you and say, hey, that's the one. So when we got there, I didn't do that. I knew where I needed to be, I knew who I needed to talk to, and I knew what needed to be done. So instead of going to talk to Braxton, and I think Braxton was 7 years old at the time, he was the youngest kid there.
He was the youngest
there. Out of maybe like 30. He was the youngest kid there. So naturally, majority were teenagers. So the majority of people who are adopting probably are leaning towards younger, because they're thinking, oh,
and they
mold this child.
And everybody was in line to meet Braxton. Because again, he was the youngest there.
So I decided that instead of going directly to Braxton, I'm going to go to the case manager. So I'm going to the supervisor. I'm going to this person, this person, this person. And I'm saying, hey, on this date, I had sent an inquiry about Braxton, wanted to adopt him a couple months ago. And, you know, I'd really love the opportunity to talk to you all about how we can make that happen. So this person says, oh, well, did you speak to this person? I said, no, but let me do it. Then I speak to that person. They said, oh, well, you need to speak to this person. I said, well, point me the way. Show me the way. So we eventually land on Braxton's case manager, who is the most wonderful person.
Yeah.
I'm not going to be able to share her name just because of whatever privacy stuff, but she is fantastic.
And she said, okay, I'm going to carve out some time for you guys to meet Braxton, be with Braxton. And just so it happened, we got that carve out during the lunch period, which we got to spend a little bit more time with Braxton because it was the lunch time. And again, everybody was, you know, all goo-goo and gaga over Braxton. Mm-hmm. At the end of the day, Braxton has seen so many people. We had to wrap up because there were other people. Braxton was like, no, I want y'all to stay. I don't want to talk to them. I want these other things. I want y'all to stay. Well, we had to tell Braxton, we gotta go. You have to see other people. And what was it? It was the next day.
So we left, and the next day I did reach out to everybody. I said, you know, thank you so much for the opportunity. Please let me know if there's anything further you need for us to do to reaffirm our seriousness about him. And I think 2 weeks had gone by.
Yes, they said, well, we're going to evaluate everyone.
There's several applicants.
We will determine who's the best fit for Braxton.
So undoubtedly, we were the best fit for us. and I must say, to piggyback from that, to talk about what Kelvin and I were doing as far as how we were showing our love, I was so eager to know what was going on. And at every step, Kelvin really was he was my stability
in that,
bringing me back
for the reason.
He really was. I was just going like, well, what could the possible problem be?
And I think that's my role in this relation. I'm always the voice of reason.
Yeah,
again, if we'll get the turning, all right, let's dial it back.
Kelvin is that. He is the axles. He is whatever it is that keeps these wheels going in one direction. He is that. But they eventually selected us, and Braxton had siblings. So, but they were being adopted by other people. So we were just saying, okay, well, we'll make sure that we still foster a relationship between our future son and these other families
that are adopting the siblings.
So we had a series of visitations and overnights before Braxton would inevitably move in. 2 weeks before Braxton was to move in, his brother's adoption fell through. Mm. And Tavares was 12 at the time. Mm-hmm. And the problem is, the older you get, the more difficult it is to be adopted. I met Tavares once. I called everybody involved that day. And I said, is it possible for Tavares to sleep over? That way Braxton and his brother can just have some more time together.
Pretext. The weekend we met Tavares, they had a sibling visitation. Yeah. So all of the siblings were together for just a normal visit. Right. And that the day before that visitation, Tavares's adoption fell through. And he knew it. And he was down in the dumps when he came for the sibling visitation.
And he was living, we were living in Mableton. He lived in Macon, which was like 2 hours south of us or something.
He did not want to go back to Macon.
He didn't want to go back there.
So
And I just so happened to have been in Macon for a whole different reason. I was down there for a training for defects training. I forget what class it was, but I was down in Macon for a training. And Earl was here in Mableton. We were living in Mableton at the time with the sibling visit. Mm-hmm. And he called me. He was like, "Oh, I met Tavares." And by the time he had called me, he had already called these other people. On your way back, you need to stop and get some pajamas and stuff for, because he's sleeping out. He's not going back to Macon. I'm like, "Oh, okay." And so I, drive back to Atlanta from Macon. I too meet Tavares. And I was like,
"Wonderful morning.
Wonderful, wonderful. Well mannered."
At the time he was.
Yeah, well, he was well mannered.
He mean as a snake now.
A great big brother, very protective of Braxton.
He's still there.
It was yes, sir, no, sir.
Not anymore.
Not anymore, though. Yes, sir. No. And so, we're in the process of adopting Braxton. And so, Earl, that I don't think this was a, what was this? It was a Saturday night. This is because it's on a Saturday. I had to go down and make it. It was Saturday night. Earl,
Monday morning.
After they're in bed, Earl come to me like, "Okay,
well, what are we gonna do?
I'm like, "Well, what are we gonna
decided what we were gonna do.
He had already. I'm like,
we're
adopting Braxton.
Right, but what are we gonna do about the Bronx?
And I was like, "Well, just adopt him too." And so that Monday, you got on the phone with all the powers that be.
I sure did.
To try to make this, what can we do to make this happen? We're willing to adopt Tavares as well. And the caseworker said she did leapfrog. And
she jumped through hoops. She did everything.
Like she
because it's supposed to be 6 weeks.
She was delayed.
Visitations. Before somebody can move in, there's all kind of processes.
And they were already there. Okay, we got to find a new foster home for Tavares. They were going to move him from Macon to
Rome,
Georgia. And so,
I don't like to commute.
And so, what happened was he had 2 weeks with that family in Macon.
They had submitted a 14-day notice.
So 14 days. So he had 2 weeks. And by that 2 week time,
like he'd been fired.
Braxton was already scheduled to move in permanently with us. And so it worked out where they said, okay, when Braxton moves in permanently with y'all, we'll move Tavares from Macon to move in permanently with you guys as well. So same this was like December 20th.
I think it was 21st.
21st.
Because it was a Friday.
It was a few days before Christmas.
Right.
So they move in permanently with us when we were living in Mableton.
Right.
And then we spot in August of the next year, the following year, which was last year.
Mm-hmm.
The final adoption decree, Kate, we had the final adoption decree August 14th.
That's right.
They
got our last names, everything.
Made it final. And this August 14th would be a year that the adoption was happening. And I just thought about this today because I was preparing for this podcast or what you're going to ask about our lives and things. August 14th was their final adoption. October 14th is our Wednesday
anniversary.
So I guess 14 is our number.
Mm-hmm. And you know, and let me tell you, the combination of being new parents of a 12-year-old who then became 13, and an 8-year-old who is becoming 9-year-old. The schools shutting down.
That's another
The school shut down last year.
Yeah, they moved in December. You know,
we still have the baby.
We still have the
baby.
January, right before COVID.
January to start school in Mapleton. Mm-hmm. They start January, February, March.
COVID shut the whole country down. Luckily, the baby went home to be with his birth family. Praise God. And we still keep in contact with them. So they're doing very, very well.
And that was in
March. End of February. That was the last day of February. 2 weeks later, the school shut down. And nobody can go nowhere. So we just get these new kids. We just
become parents. And we're still in the bonding period.
Right.
Yeah.
And now we homeschooling. I'm like, okay, let me learn this new math.
Right. You know that this course, well, they said about that, but the math and the reading, so they do core. We learned it as, you know, you learn your multiplication timetable, you learn your, you know, we know how to do these things. We know how to learn, right? We do it through repetition. They are doing squares and all kind of shapes and all kind of silly stuff, but whatever.
It's a mess.
Yeah, it is a task. There's a yellow four, you know, it's ridiculous. Mm-hmm.
But the weight of it all, just, you know, we haven't even officially had the final adoption. Right. They move it. We're in that what you call it, that grace period, period of bonding, getting to know. The adoption could still fall through, but we weren't letting that happen.
Right.
But, you know,
well, we did. They have some conversations. There were some moments where even Calvin and there was a particular moment where we went through a bad patch. It was rough.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like we said, the combination of the stay-at-home order, the homeschooling, dealing with children whom at that point we hadn't even known them a year.
Mm-hmm.
There were so many different challenges. We had only known them a few months. There were so many challenges that were coming our way and so many solutions that we had to come up with. I think at a certain point, we really kind of we just were not communicating effectively. We were in a bad place. Mm-hmm. Now, obviously, we have recovered and we are moving forward. We are, you know, parenthood, life, all that, whatever. But it was rough. It was very, very rough.
Yeah. We're life is great. I mean, since Mapleton, we now have another home and a bigger home in a
kids will do that to you.
School.
Yeah.
Move for the kids to be in a better school district, and they're getting some of the best education between their teachers and us, and their grandparents and tutors and everyone that extended family that's involved in their lives. We are truly, truly blessed and truly, truly happy. Before that year, we knew when the adoption was going to happen. It was going to happen in August. We had planned, like I said, let's go to Disney, but COVID happened. The final adoption was done virtually. We couldn't travel. This summer, we're getting to do that. We're going to Hawaii. We're going
Where else we're going? Are we going to down to Florida too? Are we going to do the Disney thing?
That's something.
So we have Hawaii already booked.
Right.
California. So the travel we didn't get to do last year as an adoption celebration, we're getting to do this year. Things are great. Things are wonderful. I, again, so grateful, so thankful that, you know, it's worth it.
Every challenge, every difficulty, and there are a lot of challenges, especially most people who have kids have 8 to 9 months to prepare their lives for these kids to come into them.
Right.
Even though we were making a conscious decision to build our family, you're not necessarily afforded the same amount of time because it'll come when it comes. Come on, pregnancy. But when you're pregnant, you know you're pregnant and you just deal with it and you kind of know what stage of life everyone's going to come and all those kind of things. When you adopt, although that love is just as powerful from the moment you meet those kids, it is everything ends up becoming an immediate adjustment. You know, because we moved, COVID happened, we're now teachers.
We moved.
My parents couldn't get to know the kids as well because, you know, my parents are older and all kind of stuff. Now, of course, they with the kids all the time.
Yeah.
But
again, back to the baby. The day we rode the baby, we had to go out.
Right, we got a call.
Baby, we had to go out, get baby stuff, get crib.
Yeah.
The day we were preparing for Braxton. We knew Braxton was going to be adopted. We had his room, knew where he was going to be. But now we have Tavares. So
I had to go get more furniture.
More clothes. Adjustment adventure.
Right. And it really sneaks up on you. And I think one of the things, and although we would recommend anybody who wants to start a family, if they can adopt, please, please do it. These kids are fantastic. We lucked out. We think we lucked out.
We are the ones who are blessed. We are the lucky ones.
But I must say, it is not going to be easy. And it is going to be worth it, but it's not going to be easy. And one of the things that even now, sometimes Kelvin and I are just two ships passing in the night sometimes. Because if he working during the day, I'm doing homework, I'm working. Who gonna wake up this morning in the morning?
Today I'll take him tomorrow.
And I think sometimes, and I can speak for myself, there are times when I lash out at Kelvin, not necessarily because Kelvin has done something to me, but it is almost as if I'm lashing out at Kelvin because I'm almost expecting him to read my mind sometimes. Mm. Like, you know, I'm tired. I don't want to wake him up this morning. Last night, I was just fighting with him. Why can't you just do this? Can't you just get him up this time without me having to beg you to do something? And the reality is, I can say it now in reflection of being, when I need help, sometimes I forget to ask for it. I push forward to the point where sometimes I make myself miserable.
And I'm looking around mad at everybody else. Isn't this your day? You get up and get the
rest. You see that mess? Y'all hear that mess? And it just, but it's, I think sometimes we just, so, I mean, we really do forget about ourselves.
Absolutely.
We really do sometimes. And I think there have been some moments where we've gone out on a date together. We'll go to a night, he loves steak. And so sometimes we'll go to a really nice steakhouse. We'll try a new place that serves steak. We've done that, I think, twice. We need to do it more. But steak is more expensive.
Last year, COVID again.
Yeah, that's right. Couldn't get too much COVID. But we had to remember to love each other.
Yes.
You know,
our kids tell us they love us very freely. We tell them we love them too. But some, but the truth is sometimes we forget to tell each other.
I love them, but sometimes I don't like them.
Right.
But sometimes they get on my nerve, and I just
they that moment, this every day.
In that moment, I don't like you right now.
I'm talking about us, the love between us.
Oh, us? Oh, sometimes I don't like you.
That's not true. You know, he loves me more than anything. He really does. He does. I am his morning and evening star. That's what it is.
Mm-hmm. Like this weekend when I was out there doing all the yard work.
And now you up here lying to the
people. He has examples.
This is I was out there at the same time in the morning going with him shopping for these plants. Spending from my account.
I did the work.
I did the work. I'm over here pulling these things with my back, with my thighs and my shoulders.
I'm the one with the tiller.
I'm still sore.
In the whole trying to get the wheat.
That is a machine. The machine was doing the work. You were just guiding it. I was out there like Abraham, pulling and plowing the fields as the Hebrew. I was Hebrew. I was the Hebrew. You know, that really burns my bush because at the end of the day,
my feet were hurt, my back was hurting.
No, I barely saw you out there.
I don't know how we got in the middle of a little lover's quarrel, but somehow we did.
But and you know what?
That's what it's like.
That's
how
love is.
All the time. All the time.
That's how love is. I could not love. Damn. I mean, my life is full of love. Between my parents, who have been married over 30 years, who my mother walked me down the aisle for my wedding. My father was the one who what did my father do? My father gave the prayer.
Yeah, he did.
At our wedding, my parents, my whole family was there. My aunts, my uncles, my nephew, my cousin, the whole Adams clan, and my family's from Jamaica.
Wow, so that is a whole blessing and anomaly.
Right, I'm first generation American.
And my family from
Louisiana, Shreveport, Louisiana.
They were all there.
Down south, Bible Belt.
Wow.
And every one of them.
My aunt walked me down the aisle because my parents have passed away.
And it's not as if our extended family lives in Georgia. His family lives in Shreveport. They live in
Louisiana, Texas, right. California.
And my family who came lived in New Jersey, New York,
Delaware,
Florida. Jamaica. They had to travel to get to us, and they all did it. And when I tell you that Kelvin and I, we really did luck out.
Oh, and when we combined that Jamaican and Louisiana cuisine together for the reception,
oh my God.
Oh, y'all should have been there.
Make me hungry now.
And we had, because you know, and even when we had the adoption, we could send the Zoom link out to family and friends. We had over, how many people were there?
Oh, it was so many people on that Zoom. The judge said, oh my God, I've never seen so many people on this Zoom for an adoption.
To watch the adoption of our kids.
And they're like, oh, she's like, I know you guys are loved. They're like, I don't even know who I was on that. It was
over 60 people who were watching.
I think it was
closer to 100.
Probably. I have to look and count all the screens. But it was a lot of people. And I think, especially when you're gonna start a family, when you're dealing with some of the tribulations and trials of, you know, being an LGBT couple, being a couple of color, there are just a lot of challenges that you can be posed with, but we managed to get, we really have been supported at every turn. And I believe, and I would say, that when you have that kind of support, there's really nothing you cannot do, or there's nothing that you perceive you cannot do. Like, I knew I could have a family because my parents told me I knew that I could have love because I saw it.
Yeah. I saw it all the time. I know what love is. I can recognize it.
All right, babe, let's wrap up because you know, I have my weekly.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm 30 minutes late.
You're all right.
All right, gentlemen. So we asked this question of every couple. And by the way, thank you. You've told us so much. This story, you guys, the journey you guys have taken.
And I know we probably, what? This has gone over an hour.
Right? Hey. We take as much time as necessary. We appreciate it.
Yeah.
What I wanted to ask is this. So you guys got together. And when, you know, couples get together, you guys are just, you're each people when you start off with. You get together, you're a couple. Mm-hmm. So I ask every couple this, and it's for each of you. So take a moment and kind of consider it. What is better about you because of this marriage, because of this relationship? Is there a characteristic of yours that kind of needed to be, you know, to be fed? That improved because you met the other? Why are you better because of this person that you married?
I'm better in every way. So I am literally better in, I don't even need to take too much time to think about it. I am better in every capacity because of what I share with my husband. Yes, I am. I am a better parent. I am a better man. I am a better, I'm better with my money. I'm better with.
There we go.
Kelvin said that.
There is nothing that Kelvin does not lift me up with. There's nothing that he does not improve in my life. And I mean that.
And for me, I'm more tolerant. It, you know, people often when we tell our ages, like, you know, There's an age gap, but we didn't see the age gap. And I say I'm more tolerant because I'm like, the millennial thing, I'm like, okay, I need more patience. And I've learned more patience with the millennial thing. And being in a relationship with someone who's much younger than I, it has taught me a little tolerance. And the other thing is in that, you know, we've had differences of opinion or difference in styles. And I think that difference has made us greater because he appreciates some of the things that from my experience and culture, like, he didn't know who Anita Baker was. He does. Lies. And you know, I'm now more into, you know, Rihanna and what's that other girl?
This is some bull. I thought
Anita Baker, you don't know?
Okay. He is lying, you know, through his teeth.
You know, Sade, Liz Wright, Anita Baker, you know.
Right. Yeah. I did not know who Liz Wright was.
I love Liz Wright. I love her.
I love her too. The wind and the barley, I'm here for it. I get it.
So, the ground.
There we go. I get it.
One last question for both of you. So, I apologize. I mean to cut you off. So,
go ahead.
So, one last question as we wind down here. So, you guys are in an interesting situation. Gay couple, adopted siblings, it not, you know, this happened, situation kind of dictated what happened and it worked out well for you. If you could give advice to anybody looking to adopt, what advice would you give them? Because you've gone through quite an interesting experience, marriage and then kids. What one bit of advice would you give to somebody who's considering?
Do the research. Know all of your options. There are so many options available. I can only, again, speak for the state of Georgia in our experience, that there are so many children in foster care in Georgia that need homes. Consider, if you're considering adopting from the foster care system
my advice would be to talk to somebody. Talk to somebody who has done it, because they will really and truly, almost everyone I think whom I've ever met who's adopted, will talk about it. We will scream from the rooftops what our experience is. We will share it with you, because it matters. Mm-hmm. This experience is worth sharing, and we encourage others to know this happiness. I mean, my God.
Yeah, and there are so many resources out there for adopting. There are social media groups.
Mm-hmm.
Email groups, and we get so many,
text
group emails. So there are so many resources available. Do the research, and my top advice is be committed. If this is what you want to do, if you want to adopt, commit to it, because it is something that you shouldn't waver on. You should, if you make that decision, that's what you should do.
You know what I would also say? It's kind of like, this is going to sound crazy, it's kind of like grief. Nobody can tell you how the right way to grieve. Mm. So when you are adopting or considering adopting, or you're in the process of it, don't let anybody tell you, oh, well, you should be doing this. You should feel this kind of way. No. You're starting a family. You are changing everything about your life. So if there are days where you're really, really frustrated, or you feel inadequate, or if you feel like, oh, what am I doing? That's normal. You're supposed to feel all those kind of things. You've never done this before. Mm-hmm. So just like grief, don't let somebody tell you you're doing it wrong or whatever. This is your experience.
That's right.
So go through it, whatever that means. There are hours, minutes, where you're just like, I suck at this. or y'all are trying to do me harm. Y'all are my enemies. It happens.
I don't like you.
Right. Don't tell the kids that. But there are moments where it doesn't matter how old they are, you want to cuss them out. You want to speak to them like they're grown.
Yeah.
But you just have to remember that everything you're going through, millions of other people have gone through it too. Don't be afraid to open up and to talk. Talk to somebody. So yes, anybody who is considering adopting, if you want to put my email or whatever comments, go ahead.
Don't put my email. No,
send me something. I'll talk to anything.
Well, let's let people know how they can get some help.
Resources.
Right. Right.
Whatever.
I'm always willing to share.
Awesome. Well, you gentlemen have been amazing. I love your Black love story. I think you guys have so much ahead of you, even in all the stuff that, you know, you've gone through so far. You've held on and really have dug down, committed, and are loving and creating a beautiful Black family.
It's a worthy adventure.
It really is.
Yes. Yeah, I like that.
I'm glad that we got to talk to you guys, and we talked a little bit about your, you know, I guess the relationship, but a lot more about your family, bringing the whole family together. And it's beautiful to hear. It's nice to see a family get together, a Black family together.
Right. Yeah.
The struggle is real, but you know, the reward is perfect, you know? So it's nice to see that you guys are doing well. And obviously, like she said, many years of happiness to come. And thank you for giving us a little bit of time, of your time today.
You're welcome. And we wish you all many, many more years of happiness and love and everything that you all are deserving of. You two are wonderful.
We appreciate
Well, Harvey, I think we've had another brilliant Black couple, and I have appreciated our conversation with them. Mm-hmm. I think for sure we can come to the conclusion that 100% love is worthy.
Love is worthy.
Love is many things.
There it is.
But this good love is black.
Thanks for listening to the Love is Black podcast.
Please help support the podcast by subscribing and leaving a review.
And connect with us on Facebook and Instagram at Love is Black Podcast.
See you next week.